Chapter 47. Strangely enough, I was thinking of you this very afternoon, Natalia Viktorovna. I met Mr. Razumov. I asked him to write me an article on anything he liked. You could translate it into English with such a teacher. He nodded complimentarily in my direction. At the name of Razumov, an indescribable sound, a sort of feeble squeak, as of some angry small animal, was heard in the corner occupied by the man who seemed much too large for the chair on which he sat. I did not hear what Miss Alden said. Laspara spoke again. It's time to do something, Natalia Viktorovna. But I suppose you have your own ideas. Why not write something yourself? Suppose you came to see us soon? We could talk it over. Any advice? Again I did not catch Miss Alden's words. It was Laspara's voice once more. Peter Ivanovich? He's retired for a moment into the other room. We are all waiting for him. The great man, entering at that moment, looked bigger, taller, quite imposing in a long dressing gown of some dark stuff. It descended in straight lines down to his feet. He suggested a monger or prophet, a robust figure of same desert dweller something Asiatic, and the dark glasses in conjunction with this costume made him more mysterious than ever in the subdued light. Little Laspara went back to his chair to look at the map, the only brilliantly lit object in the room. Even from my distant position by the door I could make out, by the shape of the blue part representing the water, that it was a map of the Baltic provinces. Peter Ivanovich exclaimed slightly, advancing towards Miss Alden, checked himself on perceiving me, very vaguely no doubt, and peered with his dark, bespectacled stare. He must have recognized me by my gray hair, because, with a marked shrug of his broad shoulders, he turned to Miss Alden in benevolent indulgence. He seized her hand in his thick cushioned palm, and put his other big paw over it like a lid. While those two standing in the middle of the floor were exchanging a few inaudible phrases, no one else moved in the room. Laspara, with his back to us, kneeling on the chair, his elbows propped on the big scale map, the shadowy enormity in the corner, the frankly staring man with the goatee on the sofa, the woman in the red blouse by his side, not one of them stirred. I suppose that really they had no time, for Miss Alden withdrew her hand immediately from Peter Ivanovich, and before I was ready for her was moving to the door. A disregarded Westerner, I threw it open hurriedly, and followed her out, my last glance leaving them all motionless in their varied poses. Peter Ivanovich alone standing up, with his dark glasses like an enormous blind teacher, and behind him the vivid patch of light on the colored map, pored over by the diminutive Laspara. Later on, much later on, at the time of the newspaper rumors, they were vague, and soon died out, of an abortive military conspiracy in Russia, I remembered the glimpse I had of that motionless group with its central figure. No details ever came out, but it was known that the revolutionary parties abroad had given their assistance, had sent emissaries in advance, that even money was found to dispatch a steamer with a cargo of arms and conspirators to invade the Baltic provinces. And while my eyes scanned the imperfect disclosures in which the world was not much interested, I thought that the old, settled Europe had been given in my person attending that Russian girl something like a glimpse behind the scenes. A short, strange glimpse on the top floor of a great hotel of all places in the world. The great man himself, the motionless great bulk in the corner of the slayer of spies and gendarmes, Yakovlich, the veteran of ancient terrorist campaigns, the woman, with her hair as white as mine, and the lively black eyes, all in a mysterious half-light, with the strongly lighted map of Russia on the table. The woman I had the opportunity to see again. As we were waiting for the lift, she came hurrying along the corridor, with her eyes fastened on Miss Alden's face, and drew her aside, as if for a confidential communication. It was not long. A few words only. Going down in the lift, Natalia Alden did not break the silence. It was only when out of the hotel, and as we moved along the quay in the fresh darkness spangled by the quay lights, reflected in the black water of the little port on our left hand, and with lofty piles of hotels on our right, that she spoke. "That was Sofia Antonovna, you know the woman?
Yes, I know the famous.
The same. It appears that, after we went out, Peter Ivanovich told them why I had come. That was the reason she ran out after us. She named herself to me, and then she said, 'You are the sister of a brave man who shall be remembered. You may see better times.' I told her I hoped to see the time when all this would be forgotten, even if the name of my brother were to be forgotten too. Something moved me to say that, but you understand?"
"Yes," I said.
"Who think of the era of concord and justice.
Yes.
There is too much hate and revenge in that work. It must be done. It is a sacrifice, and so let it be all the greater. Destruction is the work of anger. Let the tyrants and the slayers be forgotten together, and only the reconstructors be remembered."
And did Sofia Antonovna agree with you?
I asked skeptically. She did not say anything except, "It is good for you to believe in love." I should think she understood me. Then she asked me if I hoped to see Mr. Razumov presently. I said I trusted I could manage to bring him to see my mother this evening, as my mother had learned of his being here, and was morbidly impatient to learn if he could tell us something of Victor. He was the only friend of my brother we knew of, and a great intimate. She said, "Oh, your brother, yes. Please tell Mr. Razumov that I have made public the story which came to me from St. Petersburg. It concerns your brother's arrest," she added. "He was betrayed by a man of the people who has since hanged himself. Mr. Razumov will explain it all to you. I gave him the full information this afternoon. And please tell Mr. Razumov that Sofia Antonovna sends him her greetings. I am going away early in the morning, far away." And Miss Alden added, after a moment of silence, "I was so moved by what I heard so unexpectedly, that I simply could not speak to you before. A man of the people. Oh, our poor people." She walked slowly, as if tired out suddenly. Her head drooped. From the windows of a building with terraces and balconies came the banal sound of hotel music. Before the low mean portals of the casino, two red posters blazed under the electric lamps, with a cheap provincial effect. And the emptiness of the quays, the desert aspect of the streets, had an air of hypocritical respectability, and of inexpressible dreariness. I had taken for granted as he had obtained the address, and let myself be guided by her. On the Mont Blanc Bridge, where a few dark figures seemed lost in the wide and long perspective defined by the lights, she said, "It isn't very far from our house." I somehow thought it couldn't be. "The address is Rue de Kerouge. I think it must be one of those big new houses for artisans." She took my arm confidingly, familiarly, and accelerated her pace. There was something primitive in our proceedings. We did not think of the resources of civilization. A late tramcar overtook us. A row of fiacres stood by the railing of the gardens. It never entered our heads to make use of these conveyances. She was too hurried, perhaps, and as to myself, well, as he had taken my arm confidingly. As we were ascending the easy incline of the Caradery, all the shops shuttered, and no light in any of the windows, as if all the mercenary population had fled at the end of the day, she said tentatively, "I could run in for a moment, to have a look at Mother. It would not be much out of the way." I dissuaded her. If Mrs. Alden really expected to see Razumov that night, it would have been unwise to show herself without him. The sooner we got hold of the young man, and brought him along to calm her mother's agitation, the better. She assented to my reasoning, and we crossed diagonally the Place de Theatre, bluish-gray with its floor of slabs of stone, under the electric light, and the lonely equestrian statue all black in the middle.
In the Rue de Carouge we were in the poorer quarters, and approaching the outskirts of the town. Vacant building plots alternated with high, new houses. At the corner of a side street the crude light of a whitewash shop fell into the night, fan-like, through a wide doorway. One could see from a distance the inner wall with its scantily furnished shelves, and the deal counter painted brown. That was the house. Approaching it along the dark stretch of a fence of tarred planks, we saw the narrow pallet face of the cut angle, five single windows high, without a gleam in them, and crowned by the heavy shadow of a jutting roof slope. "We must think we're in the shop," Miss Alden directed me. A sallow, thinly whiskered man, wearing a dingy white collar and a frayed tie, laid down a newspaper, and, leaning familiarly on both elbows far over the bare counter, answered that the person I was inquiring for was indeed his locator on the third floor, but that for the moment he was out. "For the moment," I repeated, after a glance at Miss Alden. "Oh's this mean, that you expect him back at once?" He was very gentle, with ingratiating eyes and soft lips. He smiled faintly, as though he knew all about everything. Mr. Razumov, after being absent all day, had returned early in the evening. He was very surprised about half an hour or a little more, since to see him come down again. Mr. Razumov left his key, and in the course of some words which passed between them had remarked that he was going out, because he needed air. Greater than from behind the bare counter he went on smiling at us, his head held between his hands. Air. Air. But whether that meant a long, or a short absence it was difficult to say. The night was very close, certainly. After a pause, his ingratiating eyes turned to the door, he added, "The storm shall drive him in." "There's going to be a storm?" I asked. "Why, yes." As if to confirm his words we heard a very distant, deep rumbling noise. Consulting Miss Alden by a glance, I saw her so reluctant to give up her quest that I asked the shopkeeper, in case Mr. Razumov came home within half an hour, to beg him to remain downstairs in the shop. We would look in again presently. For all answer he moved his head imperceptibly. The approval of Miss Alden was expressed by her silence. We walked slowly down the street, away from the town. The low garden walls of the modest villas doomed to demolition were overhung by the boughs of trees and masses of foliage, lighted from below by gas lamps. The violent and monotonous noise of the icy waters of the Yar falling over a low dam swept towards us with a chilly draft of air across a great open space, where a double line of lamplights outlined a street as yet without houses. But on the other shore, overhung by the awful blackness of the thunder cloud, a solitary dim light seemed to watch us with a weary stare. When we had strolled as far as the bridge, I said, "We had better get back." Dot, dot, in the shop the sickly man was studying his smudgy newspaper, now spread out largely on the counter. He just raised his head when I looked in, and shook it negatively, pursing up his lips. I rejoined Miss Alden outside at once, and we moved off at a brisk pace. She remarked that she would send Anna with a note the first thing in the morning. I respected her taciturnity, silence being perhaps the best way to show my concern. The semi-rural street we followed on our return changed gradually to the usual town thoroughfare, broad and deserted. We did not meet four people altogether, and the way seemed interminable, because my companion's natural anxiety had communicated itself sympathetically to me. At last we turned into the Boulevard des Philosophes, more wide, more empty, more dead, the very desolation of slumbering respectability. At the sight of the two lighted windows, very conspicuous from afar, I had the mental vision of Mrs. Alden in her armchair keeping a dreadful, tormenting vigil under the evil spell of an arbitrary rule. A victim of tyranny and revolution, a sight at once cruel and absurd. "Three, you will come in for a moment?" said Natalia Alden. I demurred on account of the late hour. "Oh no, mother likes you so much," she insisted. "I will just come in, to hear how your mother is," she said, as if to herself, I don't even know whether she will believe that I could not find Mr. Razumov, since he has taken it into her head that I am concealing something from her. You may be able to persuade her. Dot, your mother may mistrust me too, I observed.
You? Why? What could you have to conceal from her? You are not a Russian nor a conspirator.
I felt profoundly my European remoteness, and said nothing, but I made up my mind to play my part of helpless spectator to the end. The distant rolling of thunder in the valley of the Rhone was coming nearer to the sleeping town of prosaic virtues and universal hospitality. We crossed the street opposite the great dark gateway, and Miss Alden rang at the door of the apartment. It was opened almost instantly, as if the elderly maid had been waiting in the anteroom for our return. Her flat physiognomy had an air of satisfaction. The gentleman was there, she declared, while closing the door. Neither of us understood. Miss Alden turned round brusquely to her.
Oh? Herr Razumov, she explained.
As he had heard enough of our conversation before we left to know why her young mistress was going out. Therefore, when the gentleman gave his name at the door, she admitted him at once.
No one could have foreseen that, Miss Alden murmured, with her serious gray eyes fixed upon mine.
And, remembering the expression of the young man's face seen not much more than 4 hours ago, the look of a haunted somnambulist, I wondered with a sort of awe.
You asked my mother first? Miss Alden inquired of the maid.
No. I announced the gentleman, she answered, surprised at our troubled faces.
Still, I said in an undertone, your mother was prepared.
Yes. But he has no idea. Dot, it seemed to me, she doubted his tact.
To her question how long the gentleman had been with her mother, the maid told us that Der Herr had been in the drawing room no more than a short quarter of an hour.
She waited a moment, then withdrew, looking a little scared.
Miss Alden gazed at me in silence.
As things have turned out, I said, you happen to know exactly what your brother's friend has to tell your mother.
And surely after that.
Dot, yes, said Natalia Alden slowly. I only wonder, as I was not here when he came, if it wouldn't be better not to interrupt now.
We remained silent, and I suppose we both strained our ears, but no sound reached us through the closed door.
The features of Miss Alden expressed a painful irresolution. She made a movement, as if to go in, but checked herself.
As he had heard footsteps on the other side of the door,
it came open, and Razumov, without pausing, stepped out into the anteroom.
The fatigue of that day and the struggle with himself had changed him, so much that I would have hesitated to recognize that face which, only a few hours before, when he brushed against me in front of the post office, had been startling enough but quite different.
It had been not so livid then, and its eyes not so somber.
They certainly looked more sane now, but there was upon them the shadow of something consciously evil.
I speak of that, because, at first, their glance fell on me, though without any sort of recognition or even comprehension.
I was simply in the line of his stare.
I don't know if he had heard the bell or expected to see anybody.
He was going out, I believe, and I do not think that he saw Miss Alden till she advanced towards him a step or two.
He disregarded the hand she put out.
Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.